Welcome to Strengthen, a podcast dedicated to inspiring you to become your strongest self. I am your host, Gabby Barreto, a registered dietitian and personal trainer with the mission of empowering you to become the best version of yourself yet. So let's get stronger together. Friends, and welcome back. I am super excited for today's episode. I have one of my good friends and fellow nutritionist, future dietitian, Amber, and I'm very excited to get into our conversation. We actually talk about nutrition for fight sports. We talk about her experience being a boxer and actually fighting, and we also talk about her experience with IBS and SIBO and figuring out what the heck was wrong with her gut. So if you have gut trouble, this episode is for you. Now, I'm going to say a big trigger warning now. We do discuss weight loss, and we do discuss weight loss specifically for fight sports. We do not discuss weight loss for anything other than that. So if discussing weight loss is a little bit of a trigger for you, I recommend that you fast forward to about 27 to 28 minutes into this episode if you're interested in learning about her experience with SIBO, IBS, and gut issues, and how she solved that and how she can help you solve that. Now, the last thing I'm going to say is that there is a little piece of this episode where my Zoom audio kind of went out. Thank you, crappy internet. So there is a portion where I did have to re-record what I said. So just be mindful of that. Thank you guys for tuning in, and send me your feedback on this episode and any future topics you want me to discuss. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Strengthen. And today I have another RD guest. I know we had another RD guest last time, and we have an RD. Remember, RD stands for registered dietitian. And so we are certified licensed nutrition professionals. And so I'm really excited to have Amber on here. She's not only a dietitian, but also a personal trainer, and I would say like a boxing badass, but she'll tell us more about that, which is really cool. And so I actually met her in a beef seminar or beef workshop that Nicole, who was on our last episode, invited us both to. So it's a little like community we have going on in these two episodes. So I'm really excited to hear about her work, her philosophies on nutrition and fitness, and how she helps, I guess, mostly women, but we'll hear more about how she really helps people. And so, Amber, welcome. Why don't you tell us a little bit about you and a little bit about your background?
Thank you so much for having me, Gabby. I'm so honored. I am a certified personal trainer. I live in New York City. I'm a dietetic intern. Almost a dietitian. I have my master's in nutrition and human performance, and I absolutely 100% am obsessed with my graduate school. I love them to pieces. I've been, I think, in the fitness industry for a decade now. I teach boxing. I teach strength training. I work with people primarily on any kind of like weight loss goals, health goals, and sports performance. I am super into the microbiome and gut health, which was really driven by my own personal experience. But I do mostly work with women. That's my main audience. And it just all kind of happened naturally and kind of by accident, I guess. I stuck with it. I train males. I don't mind training men at all, but I definitely love the empowerment that women get from training with me and teaching them boxing and teaching them strength training, you know, really something that used to be very male dominated. I love sharing that with other females because it has helped shape and mold me. And it has brought a lot of balance and strength into other areas of my life. And sharing that, it's a gift that keeps on giving, really.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, I always talk about it, how empowering strength training is. And like you said, like, it's primarily like male dominant. It really is. I was talking with another trainer earlier, you know, like, even though we work with women, it's still such a male dominant, like, industry. And, you know, it's great that there's so many more women, like, out there, in especially in New York City, like, that's our place. You know, even other areas of the country, and now that we have social media, who are like really empowering, like, a woman driven, you know, that women should be strong and women should be empowered through strength, which is really cool. And so you're really into boxing too, which I'm really into boxing too. And I've discovered boxing like 10, actually, like, I'm like, hard for me to say 10 years ago already at this point, because I feel like it was just yesterday I went to like a local gym to like get a job, and then I started boxing and doing kickboxing there. But tell us a little bit about how you got into boxing, because it's not like traditional for like young girls to like, at least in this area, to really like be into boxing from, you know, a young age, which is why I hopped in my 20s. So tell us a little bit about that.
Kind of like you know, you go into a gym for a job, and then you end up being a boxing instructor and learning boxing. So I quit my corporate job to become a personal trainer. And I did not start off looking for a job in a traditional manner. Like, a lot of people become personal trainers, they go work at Crunch, they go work at Equinox. They work for some sort of big box gym before they end up going out on their own. And I'm doing the same thing in dietetics that I did with my fitness training, where I just was like, I don't need to start there. I'm just going to go out there and get it. And I had no clue what I was doing. I had looked at this independent gym downtown in the NoHo Soho area called Work Train Fight. And it was like a Facebook ad. And I was like, oh, what is this? So I went there. I brought a client there. And I was just feeling out, like, it was intimidating at first. I walked in, there's this boxing ring, and I'm like, oh God. I'm like, how did I choose a boxing gym? I'm like, what is this? So now I look over and I see like all like the weight stuff. I was like, okay, client, we're going to go over here. I'm like, we're not going to be over there by the boxing ring. We're going to be over here. So, you know, we started, you know, we just did our weight training there. And then I was just kind of looking around, just, you know, giving everything an eye, and I was like, oh, I kind of like the vibe here. I'm like, this is pretty cool. And then we left, and I didn't go back there right away. I, again, found another Facebook ad for them. They were looking for trainers. And I was like, oh, I've been there once before. I was like, maybe I should work there. I'm like, let me apply. Right. So I applied, and I got an email, and I had the interview. And he interviewed me. Then he introduced me to the owner. And the owner, the first thing he said, he's like, do you box? And I'm like, what? No. Meanwhile, I'm coming from like corporate world, like where stilettos and fashion was like the thing. And
yeah,
you know, I was always worried about what kind of necklace am I going to wear with my big over extravagant earrings and my shoes,
right?
You know, never would I have pictured me becoming a boxer and getting punched in the face and like kind of liking it, you know? So,
right.
I was like, yeah, I've boxed, I've done kickboxing, like from the CKO. And he's like,
CKO.
He's like, yeah, he's like CKO. And I was like, yeah, sure. And he was like, all right, come back at this time on this day. I came back at that time on that day. He gave me wraps, he gave me gloves, and he was like, you're going to learn how to box. And I'm like,
that's awesome.
What? I was like, what the hell? I'm like, okay, cool. I was just rolling with it. I had no idea what to expect. You know, and then he was like, you're going to learn how to box, and you're going to clean up your technique, and you're going to teach classes here. You're going to teach clients here. He's like, but you need to learn how to box. I was like, but I don't want to really, I just want to lift weights. Cause like I'm coming from like bodybuilding, you know, and like competing and all this stuff. And he's just like, no, you're gonna learn how to box. So he was training me. I went through like this really rigorous staff development there. And then I linked up with my coach, who became one of my really great friends. And he took me under his wing and he was just like, mm-hmm. you have a lot of potential. He's like, and I'm going to train you. And he just like, he trained me and he believed in me and he taught me all this stuff. And he was like, you're going to be good. He's like, I'm going to train you. He's like, you're going to be a good fighter. He was like, you're going to know everything. You're going to look good while you do it. He's like, and then you're going to teach people and you're just going to be good. And I'm like, okay, cool. Okay. Like, whatever you think I'm going to do, you know, whatever you think is best. So I trusted him and, you know, he taught me a lot. And then I was like, I think I'm going to fight. I'm like, I think I should do it. And he was like, I think you should. So then we just upped the notch. Like times 20.
That's amazing.
And it was like 6 days a week for 3 months. The sparring sessions were intense. It was fun. It got to a point now, like with boxing, it's like, even if I don't want to fight again, I definitely like the training of it as if I'm going to fight. It's just very satisfying. It's very intense. And I just like that intensity of it and the discipline of it. There's a lot of discipline involved and I like that. There's been times he's knocked a contact out of my eye and I cried and he was like, keep going. And
I love fighters. I work with some fighters and like I do their nutrition and I love working with fighters because of that you mentioned, like that discipline. And you know, like there's a lot of my clients are super disciplined and there's a difference between like when working with like an athlete and you know, working with not, because athletes are very, not all of them, but like very, very disciplined. And it does, especially when you're in, you know, a fight sport. I always, like when I teach my boxing classes, I explain to people, like you are offense and you are defense. If you know anything about sports, there's offense and there's defense. You are both at the same exact time and you're not protecting a ball. You're not protecting a net. You're protecting your actual face. Like you are protecting your own body and it takes such heart. And so like, I commend you for like going out there and fighting. Cause that's something that like, I always thought about, but like you need to have a certain kind of like something in you to actually go in there and fight. So that's pretty like, that's big. That's big that you went in there and fought. I tell my clients that all the time. I was like, I don't know how you get punched in the face. I've gotten punched in the face before by my coaches. And I was just like, no, thank you. This is not for me. So you got punched in the face and you said, I like this. I'm going to keep doing it. So good for you.
It hurts. It definitely hurts.
Yeah, it does.
You know, it's definitely, it's scary before you get in there. And I remember I think I peed like 6 times right before they called my name. And then I was thirsty and then my coach squirted water in my mouth and I started choking. And then I was like, oh my God, I'm choking. And I'm like, now I'm panicking. And I just had all these nerves. All of a sudden I heard my name and my fight song come up. And then I just like looked up, I popped the mouth guard in my mouth and I walked out without my coach. And he was like, where are you going? I was like, they call my name. I gotta go. And he's like,
oh my gosh.
So you see him like running after me. And then it went so fast. The fight, it went so fast. It was very peaceful. That's the only way I could explain it. Like everything is so loud, like outside the ring, but when you're in the ring, you don't hear anything else outside of there. Like it's you, your opponent, and your breath. And I was just trying to like tell myself, and you have to pay attention to your coach because your coach is screaming at you. And I just really tried my best to just make sure like, all right, like I need to listen to Alex and I need to fucking win. And, you know, and I just need to do my best. And it wasn't even about the winning. Like I was just in there and I was like, all right, I'm doing it. And I think the hardest part about it was that I was fighting my friend. So it wasn't someone I didn't know. It was a friend of mine. And it was like, oh my God, we're going to beat the shit out of each other. I'm like,
of each other.
Okay. So like we talked about it, you know, before the fight and she was like, you know, she's like, I'm just going to train. It's like a sparring session, you know, like we normally do. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, it's just a sparring session. And then, you know, we both knew like there's no hard feelings and we just fucking went at it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's very skillful. You have to really think about like your strategy going in there, because people, mm-hmm. they just go in, they just want to start swinging, they tire themselves out, and you're not supposed to do that. Right. You know, you yeah. have to try to make the other person tired and conserve your energy somehow. And then that third round is like, it's all out. War. Yeah. The third round is fun. But it's, you know, and diet plays a huge role. So, you know, absolutely. You know, how you help your fighters, you know, how you make sure that they're nourished and they're energized for their fight, you know, and cutting weight. I picked a weight that I was at 132, and I was like, I'll say at 132. I'm like, I'm not cutting and I'm not gaining. I'm like, so whoever I'm fighting, they're going to have to cut and they're going to be tired. So that was my thought process. Right. So right before weigh-ins, I was eating a cookie and everyone was hungry and people like didn't really want to eat. And I'm like, because they wanted to make weight. And I'm like, I'm just sitting in the dressing room eating my cookie. And they're like, oh, weigh-ins, you're eating? And I'm like, well, yeah, because I weigh the same all day. And I'm like, trust me, I have it calculated to a T. So it's good. I'm like, I had rice before this. I'm like, I had chicken. I'm like, I'm hydrated. Right. I'm like, we're good. So I helped my opponent cut her weight because I was like, you're fighting. I'm like, there's no way in hell that I went through all this and for you not to fight, like, here, do this. So I have to like give her tips to help her cut her weight.
I think people look at fight sports as like, I mean, and you'll watch, like, if you watch the UFC, it's like, sometimes it's like this, like, I mean, you'll look at like a lot of the bigger names, like Conor McGregor, and they like make these like big stories, right? So like these big stories of like the hatred, and it's not always like that. A lot mm-hmm. of times these fights are like, these two guys may have trained together in the same gym and, you know, they are very amicable. But it's funny because, like, I mean, you'll see sometimes there's like beef, but then like a lot of people go in there and they fight their training partners, or like they fight, like, with you, like you're fighting your friend. And so it shows, like, it's so interesting that like you went and like helped them cut, because I think people look at a lot of fight sports as like this, like, it's like an emotional, or like, I'm fighting out of hatred, or like I'm fighting out of anger. And sure, that may exist, but like, there's a lot of there's a lot of sportsmanship in the sport itself. Like, someone will go and knock someone out and then like go over to them and help them up. There's such sportsmanship, and people might look at it as like, this is like, if they're not involved, you know, or they don't know much about it, that like, this is kind of weird. Like, weren't you trying to knock them out? But like, no, it's like, there's a lot of sportsmanship in fighting. And I think that's so awesome that you like went and like helped your opponent cut, which is very funny.
Yeah, no, it's not in there. I mean, some people, they go into the ring and they want to like rip someone's head off, you know, it could be anger driven, but it's really, you know, it's skill. You want to show off your skill, and I mean, I would hope if I do fight again, it's someone like I don't know, so I get that experience. Yeah. You know, because it's different when you're fighting someone that you're always sparring with, you know, or that you've trained for the fight with, you know, it's different. I would hope that my next one would be someone like I don't know. So,
I mean, like some of my clients are like, I can't wait to rip this girl's head off, which is fun. Cause you get to see that, you get to see that side to it, which is funny. Like, I broke her nose. Yeah. You know, but I love fight sports. My family thinks I'm crazy that like, I watch this stuff and that I love this stuff. And sometimes it is hard to watch. Like, sometimes some of this stuff is hard to watch, but I love it. I love it. I love fighting.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. So, I think it's really interesting that you chose like not to cut weight. When I was in grad school, I did a lot of research. Like, I even did like my papers on like my sports nutrition papers on fight sports and weight cutting, and like, is there an advantage? And like, there is a lot of danger to weight cutting if you're not doing it right. And so you know, have you helped other people like cut weight, and like, what are some of your like weight cutting like tips or advice, or, you know, just general, because I mean, I have a lot of knowledge, but I'd love to hear from you, like, what, you know, how do you approach weight cuts with people?
I think it's important to know the motivating factor of why they want to cut weight to fight, especially for a female. I find, you know, so a little backstory though. So the gym that I work at, we host fight nights, and fight nights are open to amateurs and developmental bouts. And developmental bouts are first time fighters. I think you can fight a developmental for up to 3 times before you have to start doing amateur. The developmental bouts, we get a lot of like our gym members. So that's one of the things that I love about that gym is that like we empower people to actually step in the ring and fight and to do their first fight. So I pretty much became the nutrition point of contact. So when people were cutting and stuff, they would always ask me questions. And I would just like, you know, you have to do it safely. If you think you're going to fight, you know, in November, right now it's August, you need to start right now and slowly start gradually cutting and not doing anything aggressive. A lot of things that I see is some of the women that want to cut weight or that want to fight, the reasoning behind it is one, yes, they want to try to fight. Two, they want to lose weight. And I'm like, you can't go into this sport for weight loss. You can't do that. I had a client at one point, she was training for a marathon and then wanted to train for a fight. And I was like, you need to pick one. I'm like, cause you got two different energy systems happening here and I can't have you can't do both. I'm like, it's going to be contradicting here. And I'm going to be feeding you a lot more if that's the case. And she was like, no, I want to lose weight. And I'm like, you can't do all three. It's not safe.
Can't.
you know, like you cannot be training.
That's what we got to educate people. Yeah,
exactly. You can't train for a marathon, you know, run was a marathon, what, 25 miles and then
something like 26
and then train for a fight. Like that's right. I'm like, holy crap. That's a lot of effort and a lot of training and a lot of food to keep up with that. You know, I generally tell people, I'm like, cut out the processed stuff, you know, just like their first time cutting and stuff like that. Cut out the processed stuff, eat well to perform well. And, you know, just I focus all on macronutrients too. So, you know, making sure that I'm giving them adequate protein to prevent muscle mass loss, making sure that they're eating the carbohydrates around their workouts. So for energy and for replenishment, and then also for hormonal health, their fats are up to par for the rest of the day. You know, and the goal with that is to eat as much as you can while being in a deficit for your weight cut.
Right.
You know, there's water techniques that we could use to help dehydrate you out to make weight. You know, there's different ways to do it. I like to tell people, if you're going to plan to fight, start your weight loss early, not 2 months out where you're drastically cutting everything.
Absolutely.
Adopt a healthy lifestyle, have better food choices, and then slowly work your way into that deficit. So that way your body's adapting over time. I could add in refeeds and little diet breaks here and there just to replenish your body more and kind of like give you like that break. So it really depends on the individual too.
Right. And I think it's really important too, like when talking with fighters, and we have to look at what your body's actually able to do. And so like, you also have to look at somebody's whole body composition, like what is their muscle mass to, you know, fat mass ratio, and how much weight can you actually lose? Like your body composition plays a huge part in it. And I think what you're saying is, you know, is the gradual versus the acute stuff, which, I mean, I've spoken with people who have ended up in the hospital. Like,
so when we're discussing like, what is your intention to fight? It's really important to recognize that fighting is really, like we said, is really not a place where you go for weight loss, and that weight loss for fighting is intentional. It's for the sport, and it's not necessarily and shouldn't be for the aesthetic.
I think you're, you know, especially working with people who may not be even be going to the professional level, but it, you know, like you said, like, pick your goal, you know, what weight class are you, you know, going for, and then like work on that gradual part of it, which is like really the smartest way to go about it. And like you said, your intention, and like is if your goal is like long-term weight loss, this is not why you should be doing it.
And that's the most common thing that you get a lot of these girls that they just want to lose weight. And that's why they'll choose like to do it. And they pick a weird weight too, to cut down to. And I'm like you said, like being 132 and cutting down to 115, I'm like, why?
Why?
I'm like, do you know how much 5 pounds makes a difference? I'm like, yes, cutting weight has its benefits because you're lighter, you're quicker. But when you have weight, you're stronger, you're sturdier, you know, you have more weight and more power behind that punch.
Right.
So that's one of the things that I love, you know, with me is that I come from a weightlifting background. So like, I know my punches are strong. And I have a lot of power. And it's one of the things that my coach yells at me, you know, is like, you know, be quicker. And I'm like, I'm just naturally like more of a heavy hitter than a speedy hitter. I'll admit
that's like
I'm not that fast. Yeah, I'm not fast. But, you know, I have to give a huge thank you to my deadlifts, my squats, you know,
absolutely
being able to lift heavy things with my hands and having that mind muscle connection. So when you're throwing that, you're putting all of your weight into that punch. I mean, I think it's annoying if you're fighting someone who's like really quick, but they have no power behind it. Like I've sparred with girls that are like that. And I'm just like, you know, like they're faster than me. And I'm like, oh my God, this girl's so fast. Like she's going to tire me out. And meanwhile, I'm just sitting there. And she's like tap, 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 tap in the face. And I'm like, that's it. I'm like, okay. And then you got my coach telling me, move your head. I'm like, why would I move my head? I don't feel anything, you know?
Right. And like, I mean, you can have one powerful punch and that's it. So funny, the trainer I was working with, he would be like, I don't know many people with a power jab. Like you throw power jabs. I was like, because I'm strong. Because I'm a strong, like that's my background is weightlifting. My background is strength. So I agree with you. It's important to have that strength. And I try to tell that to, you know, the athletes I work with, like you need strength. It's not just about like going into practice and going into the sport, like having strength is super, super important. You know, which like we talked about what that translates into. I think that's so, so cool that you do that. I'm like super, super jealous, but at the same time, I'm like, I'm happy. I didn't do that, but thank you for sharing that. That was super cool. And so I wanted to ask you about also, you mentioned like one of your specialties is the microbiome. And it's really funny because I just like after this recording I have up on here, I did a, you know, scan, right? So if nobody knows, scan is, I don't even remember what it stands for, but scan is like the sports nutrition group for dietitians. And so they did a webinar, an event. And so what I have right now up is the future of fitness, the microbiome, the next generation of probiotics. So after this, I'm going to listen to that. So I'm going to get a big microbiome lesson for today. So tell us a little bit about how you got into really, you know, working with the microbiome and how you help people with that and your background about that.
So yeah, the microbiome is really interesting and it stemmed years ago, probably like 8-9 years ago, I was having gut dysfunction. I got really sick over the years just because, you know, I was just trying to eliminate everything out of my diet because I couldn't figure out what it was. My GI was not helpful at the time. But there is no reason to be walking around gassy every single day and not being able to eat food because it hurt. Like it literally felt like my stomach was on fire. I had gastritis all the time. I didn't eat broccoli for the longest time because I wasn't sure if that's what would cause my stomach to burn in the middle of the night. And it's probably one of the most uncomfortable feelings. Like you feel like you're burning from the inside out and you can't stop it. You know, so I was going through that. I was constantly bloated, constantly, you know, always getting like gas bubbles stuck under my ribs and it was just uncomfortable. So bloated and in pain all the time and nothing I ate helped. It just always made it worse. And my diet got down to, it was just oats, bread, eggs, protein powder, and celery. Maybe a little romaine lettuce, a couple carrots here and there. That's about it.
Lovely.
I got rid of like almost all of my food because I couldn't figure it out. No. And this doctor was just like, oh yeah, you have IBS. And I'm like, okay, well, I read up on it and it said do an elimination diet, but here's like the 7 things that I eat. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're doing it pretty good. And I'm like, oh, I'm doing a good job. I'm like, are you sure? And he was like,
there's nothing I can eat.
Nothing I can eat. Like any normal person, well, not normal person. I think just anyone with any kind of basic nutrition knowledge would look at the list of foods that I was eating and be like, girl, you're sick or you're going to be sick.
Yeah. Right.
You know, he just wasn't helpful. And he didn't tell me that I had a gluten issue. He didn't, you know, he didn't bother to like test for all these things. Just, oh, you have IBS, maybe try a probiotic, see if it works. Probiotics made me sick. I take a probiotic and run into the bathroom within 5 minutes. And it's like that all day. So I couldn't take a probiotic because I was just like, all right, that doesn't work.
Right.
You know, so when I was going through my master's and dealing with my own gut issues, trying to fix myself, you know, I learned about the low FODMAP diet. I tried it on myself and it worked, but it didn't solve the problem. Like it.
Yeah.
Put a band-aid on it. I was able to figure out my trigger foods, what foods were issues for me. But in my graduate school, you know, we had to learn epigenomics.
So cool.
It was really fascinating. I was like, oh my God. I'm like, this is the coolest stuff ever. I was like, who would have ever thought all of my issues are my mom's fault? So, so the whole
Thanks,
time,
Mom.
Yeah, thanks, Mom. You know, and a little background on that in case everyone's like, wait, how's that your mom's fault? Anything that happens to you as an adult started from your mother's womb. Anything your mom eats or does while she's pregnant with you influences your health outcome as an adult. It's really cool stuff. So my mom, she's like, that's bullshit. She's like, I never did anything. She's like, I took my prenatals. I was like, it's not just that. I was like, it's just like everything. I'm like, lifestyle before. I'm like, you know, so it, you know, and also like plays a role with like whether you're breastfed, cesarean, or vaginal birth, like all those things play a huge role. So I always blame her. I was like, it's your fault. But I was also introduced to antibiotics as a newborn because I had a blood infection as soon as I was born. I had like sepsis. So I was on antibiotic immediately out the womb. So I was SOL from the get-go.
Right.
So, but you know, after learning about nutrigenomics, you know, and the microbiome, I had a class on the microbiome, pain and inflammation, you know, and everything was connected to the gut. And then they were talking about this thing called SIBO, small bacterial overgrowth.
Really?
And I was like, okay, I'm like, maybe I have this because a lot of the symptoms overlap IBS symptoms, but not a lot of GI doctors actually believe in SIBO. They're like, that's not real. And I'm just like,
I know a lot of them don't believe in it.
A lot of them don't. And it's very hard to diagnose SIBO because there's 3 categories. You have hydrogen, you have methanogen, and then you have hydrogen sulfide. Hydrogen sulfide is what sits in your large colon. And if you have that, your SIBO test is always going to come back negative or flatline. That's usually a dead giveaway is when your test is flatlined. But I was tested so many times and they're like, no, you're fine. You're fine. I'm like, no, I'm clearly not. I'm like, something's not right here. You know, there, you have the gut brain access. So if you have a gut issue, you're more prone to depression and anxiety. And I was suffering really bad from that. And it was getting worse as I was getting older. Skin issues, you know, and I'm like, what the hell is going on with my life right now? I was getting like, I had like an inflamed liver. So like, my lab work was showing up as like non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And I'm like, a lot of these things are pointing towards like SIBO. And I really think this is it. And I was trying everything on my own, but it just still wasn't like working. And I was like, I need to see another doctor. And I found another one in Midtown. It's my lifesaver. He believed me. He was like, you know, he's like, you probably shouldn't be taking probiotic. It's probably making it worse. You know, every time you take it, you have like a reaction to it. And he's like, you're probably overpopulating your gut with things that you don't need. And right. I'm just sitting there and I'm like, all right, so you want to like do a stool sample? Like, let's like customize this. Like, how are we going to do this? He was like, you know, I gave like a whole layout. I was like, okay, so stool sample, you send to the lab, test what's in my microbiome. And then I take a probiotic that is accustomed to what is in my body or what's missing. Right. And I was like, you test for like whatever diversity I have. And he's like, I think you're like 10 years ahead of yourself. Eventually medicine will get there. He's like, but that's a good idea, just not yet. And I'm like, all right, well, I just gave you this idea, so do it. I'm like, like he's published in research, like he does all this stuff. I'm like, I picked you because you're a scientist also. So like, use me, you know, I'm your human guinea pig here. Like, use me, it's fine. He's like, no. He's like, but I'm going to give you this antibiotic called rifaximin. And this antibiotic has actually been tested for IBS patients. And it's been shown that if you have IBS, you know, you are like symptom free for like 3 months. And I took it and I felt amazing. I felt brand new. I could eat things I didn't think I could eat before. And I was like, this rifaximin, like really, it's like an atomic bomb that you drop in your gut and it kills off everything. And it allows your body to actually repopulate your microbiome in your gut.
What is it called again?
Rifaximin. And it's very expensive. It's $2,000, $2,500 for the prescription, and insurance probably won't cover it. So it took 5 months for my insurance company to actually cover it. So I had to fight them for a half a year. Took it, was fine for 3 months. Symptoms came back just like that in 3 months. I was like
you said,
yeah, like you said, exactly within 12 weeks. But it was worse. That was the problem. I had the worst heartburn, the worst bloat. My skin was getting really bad. All that stuff. So they gave it to me again. And then, I just felt like crap the entire time. And when you are taking rifaximin, the mental aspect of it, you get very depressed. So it was very hard for me to be here, you know, because it's just like, you have to fight these emotions that you're like, wait a minute, this is only temporary. Like, don't let this get the best of you. You know, so you're battling like these inner demons and like your gut, you're bloated and just uncomfortable. That was the second time he did it. It didn't work. I went back again. And then this time, you know, he was just like, listen, these are things like this antibiotic, it works, but it takes several treatments because he tested me for SIBO. And it, again, I came back flatline. He was like, I think you have it. He's like, and we're going to keep giving you this antibiotic until we get rid of it. Eventually it's going to go away. And I kept asking, I was like, what about, you know, probiotics? You know, my book, you know, I brought my book from my grad school. I was like, listen, Dr. Vasquez says, and he was like, but that's really specific. He's like, you're a specific case. He was like, we're not going to give you probiotics because it could cause you more harm. I'm like, all right, fine. I'll listen to you. He gave me rifaximin and then another antibiotic. And these are large doses of antibiotics. And this one specifically for C. difficile. I took that for 2 weeks. Again, an awful 2 weeks, very depressed, very just icky. And then I am 1 year post both of those antibiotics, and knock on wood, I've been great. I went against his wishes on the probiotic, where I'm lactose intolerant, but I said screw it and I started eating Greek yogurt. Does a number on my skin. However, doing that every day and just getting the probiotic from food and not from the pill, I've been fine. I could eat broccoli. I could eat brown rice. Like, I could eat normally. I still know my trigger foods for IBS, but it's just, you know, I had SIBO. And it took years to figure that out. And it took a year to get it fixed. you know, then 1 year later recovered, you know, it's like, I feel like I'm a normal person. And I think a lot of people don't take that seriously. Going back to the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So SIBO increases that risk, you know, where your liver enzymes are just elevated, you know, your body's trying to, you know, do its job, but you have this bacteria that's, you know, bacteria synthesize things. So it was just creating a shitstorm inside of me. And once that is eradicated, my liver enzymes stop elevating.
Wow. So, there's so much connection between the gut, and it's like, you know, like I've always read, it's people just think, you know, microbiome, the bacteria in your gut, it just, you know, affects your gut. But like, we know it affects so much more. Like you even talking about like liver enzymes. We can talk about mental health. We can talk about sports performance. We can talk about immune system. Yeah. I'm missing a lot of things that I'm not saying right now, but so much is really impacted. It's, you know, I was, you know, I've read like we're as much bacteria as we are human, like human cells, like, and, you know, there's some saying that it's 10 bacteria to one human cell, but the research on that, I've also read that like, maybe not so much. There's still so much that we don't know, like at all. And so I think what, you know, with your story is your advantage was that you have knowledge, right? And so you have a lot of knowledge, especially like, you know, you have a background in, you know, functional medicine and functional nutrition, is that that's a huge advantage to you. In dietetics, we don't learn about functional nutrition and functional medicine. We don't. So you have a huge advantage of that. And like, I'm, you know, slowly learning myself. But for the average person who's like experiencing gut issues, like they don't have that knowledge. So someone who's experiencing, maybe they're being told they have IBS, and like, I've had a lot of cases of people that, you know, have IBS, and I sometimes can treat them and sometimes I have to refer them out. But what kind of advice or, you know, questions you want those people to ask when they're going to doctors, or who should they seek out, you know, or, you know, what kind of treatment do you recommend? I mean, not give recommendation for treatment, but how do you recommend people start to approach this to get the help they need? The traditional medicine, it doesn't necessarily help sometimes.
It doesn't. You know, I really think, like, I work a lot with people with IBS, you know, aside from like weight loss and stuff like that, you know. So, you know, on my Instagram and stuff, like, I'll like shout out my clients that are losing weight and stuff like that. But, you know, IBS is very personal. So I don't share anything about my gut clients at all, you know, because it's just very personal for them. And I never want to give their personal identity away or share their business.
Sure. You know?
So that's why it's very separate than my other, you know, weight loss and sports performance. With IBS, and I'm sure you've seen this floating around Instagram, these before and afters of bloat, and they're extreme. So I could look at all these photos that are being posted and I'm like, you got SIBO, like, or you,
right.
you have something going on. Like, you should not look like you're 9 months pregnant. Bloating is normal, but extreme bloating is not normal. So when you eat something and you are experiencing gas pains under your rib cage or in your back by your lungs and you're uncomfortable, you might want to get that checked out. You know, if it's happening very frequently, if you're getting trapped gas, if you're excessively flatulent, you know, yes, we all pass gas. It's normal, but excessive is not normal. So if it's excessive, and also it's like, it's such an uncomfortable thing to talk about, but like, if it's like you have excessive smelling gas, get that checked out. That is a dead giveaway. Something's not right in there.
Right.
You know,
and your poop always tells a story for sure.
Yes. Your bowel movements tells a huge story. You know, are you going regularly? If you are, like, what kind of shape is it? You know, and if you have loose stools all the time, there's a problem. You know, like, I would reach out to a dietitian to see if they could look at your food intake, and are you getting enough fiber? Are you drinking enough water? Are you drinking too much water, getting too much fiber? Figure out what's going on there, you know, and if you, again, the bloat, the extreme, the comparisons, you should not be 9 months pregnant when you're not pregnant, right? You don't want to be excessively bloated. Bloat is normal, but to the point where like your pants actually just don't fit you the minute you eat anymore, something.
Yeah.
You know, you feel like you're getting more food sensitivities. You know, you're getting more brain fog and stuff like that. You know, you should really go get things like that checked out. Anything excessive and out of the ordinary, better be safe than sorry. I tell my clients all the time, they tell me, I got this issue. And I was like, go see your doctor. I'm like, let me know how it goes. Right. So
I know. I tell people that all the time. I'm like, I'm a trainer and a dietitian. And I'm like, go to the doctor. Like I had a client a couple of weeks ago that was having this pain when we were doing core work. And I'm like, this is not your abs. Like I was just saying, like, this is not a muscle pull. Like you can't even hold a plank. There's something going on. And then like the next week, like I'm having surgery, my gallbladder is getting removed. And I'm like, okay, thank God you go into the doctor, like massive infection. Couldn't digest, like really bad digestive issues. And turns out she does have SIBO, because one of my friends who does functional nutrition, like tested her, had her go to a doctor, and she definitely, you know, like has it based on her test results, SIBO. But like you don't need to live in GI pain all the time. And there's, like you mentioned, like, let's look at, are you eating enough fiber? Like we can look at the basic things first. Like if someone eating a food with a lot of sugar alcohols in it, or like a lot of those fake fibers, like, let's see, like we take that out, does that solve the issue? If it doesn't, and there's still other, if you're eating like five foods that you can tolerate, there's a concern. But there's also other things, like, let's look at like on baseline, are you even eating enough fiber? Like, is your diet all over the place? Are you eating every hour? Are you grazing all day? You know, it stops that motor complex, right? So it stops that digestion, that big push. I call it like the big push. So like an hour and a half, 2 hours after eating, like you may hear like a big rumble or feel one. It's like your body is like, your muscles are contracting. Like, so if you're eating constantly throughout the day, you're not letting your gut rest. And so that's also really important. So there's some key things we look at, but then there's some very, very glaring things, like that there is an issue that's not going to be treated by just cleaning up a few things in your diet. And that's where I am like, this is out of my hands and off to someone else, and I can't help you. And so someone like you can help them, a doctor in conjunction with working with a good GI doctor, where that's a, you know, gastroenterologist, can really help them. So many times I have people with gut issues and they're like, no, I haven't been to the GI doctor. Or no, I haven't seen anyone. I was like, we need you to go. We need to see if there's like any medical issue going on that they, and if they don't know, and if it's just labeled as IBS and you're kind of sent out the door, then we need someone else to help you.
Exactly. I mean, I was sent out the door and I can't eat gluten. So,
right.
You know, and I was eating gluten this whole time. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, I still have issues. Not once did he even ask, like, are you celiac? Do you know what celiac is? Like, nothing, mm-hmm. You know? So I had an endocrinologist figure that out. So,
wow.
Yeah, gluten, forget it. The minute, within 20 minutes of eating something with gluten, I'm sick as a dog. My stomach is distended. I'm in so much pain and it lasts for days. Mm-hmm. So that's like another thing too. You know, some people either have celiac or they have like a gluten intolerance. So if you are having GI issues, like that's something that I look at with a lot of my clients. Sometimes I eliminate gluten, sometimes I don't for them. You know, it really depends on the person. And also like diet, like if you do go to the GI and you get diagnosed with SIBO, I think it's also important to figure out what kind of SIBO you might have. I had a client, you know, a couple years ago where I had to put on a low sulfur diet, you know, just so we weren't feeding that bacteria. And the doctor was giving her, berberine and oil of oregano as a natural way to get rid of this bacteria in her gut because she had hydrogen sulfide SIBO. And taking the berberine with the oil of oregano takes a lot longer. And you really need to make sure that your diet is like to the T, because if you keep screwing up on it and we have to keep eliminating it, it's just that you run like in circles. So it's very hard to stick to a diet like that. It's very restrictive. You know, you still try to give someone adequate amounts of protein, but like, how do you do that when you're trying to keep the sulfur low? Like it's more fish. Can't really have a lot of chicken unless it's like a thigh. It's a lot. It's very complicated. Working with patients with gut dysfunction or like a SIBO client. So,
right.
But yeah,
it's patience.
Exactly. You know, you really, and also advocate for yourself. Like I said, it took me years to figure it out. So, and I wouldn't take no as an answer. So just keep going. And in my current gastro doctor's office, he believes in SIBO. He knows it's real. His colleague doesn't ever test for it. She doesn't believe in it. So, and they're in the same office. It's insane.
It is insane. I mean, like we learned about SIBO in school, like when we did medical nutrition therapy, I learned about SIBO and in depth, not really, but we learned about SIBO. It's just so interesting. But SIBO is a real thing. People do have it. And it's something that you can treat. It's, and like I said, like a lot of these gut things take patience. They really do. But like your story is incredible, really, honestly. I mean, like years of like pain and then like taking all these medications and just feeling like depressed is, you know, it's crazy what you went through, but now you're good. You're like a year
now I'm good
from gut pain.
Yes. So,
we're going to wrap things up, but I want to hear before we do just a little bit about how you help people, like, you know, outside of, you know, gut health, you know, what you're really, your, I guess the words I'm looking for. It's Friday, guys, when we're recording. So I have no brain by Friday, but I guess like what your, you know, your mentality, what your focus is on working with, you know, your clients and what your whole thing is there.
I focus on, you know, whether someone wants to lose weight or just eat better. I help people feel good from the inside out. I help them transition from placing so much value on the scale into, you know, not really to detaching to that scale, not putting all that value there, but putting that value into how they feel, how their clothes fit, how they perform in the gym, you know, just really trying to change that mindset, you know, like taking the purpose of working out, trying to change the viewpoint and the approach of I have to do this to lose weight to I want to do this because I want to be strong and I want to feel strong and live long. And I feel like, you know, as I progress in my career, you know, things change and my outlook right now, you know, is seeing how we're aging and seeing how chronic dieting affects the aging process and really puts you at risk of injury and bone fractures. You know, and I tell my clients, like, you know, you want to learn how to eat well, you want to learn how to move well, because then you're not going to be dependent when you're older. You do now to set yourself up later. No one thinks about later. No one thinks about, you know, how they're going to feel when they're 70, you know, but I just think with social media, it's actually shining a light on all these older individuals who lift weights and eat really well and don't have a lot of medical issues. You know, so I help my clients lose weight. If they want to lose weight, I get you to lose weight, but it's healthfully, you know, there is no extreme calorie restriction. And if there's a point where the calories, like if the weight isn't budging, you're not in a deficit anymore. I'm going to put you back up, you know, because health first.
Yeah. I do that. I say that all the time to people, and people know I'm not anti weight loss. I'm just very big on anti dieting. And I always tell people, I do prescribe macros and calories, but I will never prescribe you a calorie count that is going to be not healthy for you, no matter what your goal is. If it's not healthy for you, We don't do it. People have left me because I said that to them. Like, well, I need 1300 calories. I'm like, well, your metabolism is almost 1450 and you're training 6 days a week. So you're up in like the 1800, like I can't help you at that point. And so I think it's really important that you, like you said, like if it's going so low, like I have to put you back up. And like you mentioned longevity, which is like super, super important. You know, I always say this, like you worry about your long-term finances. Like we're so into like 401ks and your long-term finances. Like, why are we so more concerned about, you know, the six pack abs we may not be genetically predisposed to having like right now versus like osteoporosis, because I was trying so hard to get that like 10 years, 20 years from now. Just so important.
It's really important. You know, I had abs once and I was also very sick and had no period and you know, was lethargic. And I was just like, that felt gross. And, you know, it's the trade-off for me is not worth it. And I understand other people, they want that. And it's almost, you know, and I don't want them to experience what I experience, you know? So I try to take my experiences as a learning lesson. It's like, hey, like, I know this is going to happen. Like I've been there. So like, you sure you want to do that? Because you're going to suffer for a long time. You know, so I just want people to just live healthfully, reach a healthy weight and, you know, think realistic in terms of weight loss. People want to lose 30 pounds. Meanwhile, they're, you know, normal weight. They're already a healthy weight. And I'm like, do you know what 5 pounds even looks like? I'm like, how about we lift heavy and we gain some lean muscle mass so that way you look and feel fit. And then you're not going to be so worried about losing that 30 pounds. We get you to a healthy weight, increase your lean muscle mass, which is increases your metabolic rate, increases your immunity. Right. So we win all around.
All around winning. It's, you know, I'm happy that there's like, I mean, there's still people out there in this industry just like spewing garbage, It's still there, but I know, I think it will always be there, but as long as that's why I started this podcast. I want smart people in this industry to be talking about this stuff. And, you know, whether it's from a weight neutral perspective or a weight loss perspective. And, you know, even like what we're talking about, I don't even necessarily want it to be, you know, think about it as weight loss, but more or less like just like health and strength. And like weight loss will probably happen if you focus on those two things. But the weight loss goal itself is just so challenging when you're like, I really want to be what I was in my 20s. I was like, okay, 40 something now, Like you were 20 something 20 years ago, like your body is completely different. Especially a lot of the women I work with, like you've had 3 kids, you've had 4 kids, like your body's different. Your hormones are different. You're at a different stage of life. And so we have to take that into consideration. Like, how can we make goals that are going to make you happy, that are going to, you know, make you feel fulfilled, that not necessarily equate to like being 25 again?
Yeah, I think a lot of people try to get, you know, their older bodies back. Like, I'm 30. I think when I was 23, 24, I think I looked really great. And that's my 23-year-old body, though. You know, it's okay to miss that body and be sad about it, but also like not try to get that body back. Like the body that you have currently right now, work on that one to make that better for this life, you know, this stage in life, and not trying to live in the past. I think too many people live in the past.
I agree. I mean, like what I should have done or what I used to be like, but again, like we focus so much on that, like, yeah, our society's like focused so much on like long-term like financial health, but like what is that when we don't have our long-term health? And that's where really, like, you know, I'm in my 30s, a lot of my clients are in there, some of them are younger, even like my teen clients, and like, you know, and a lot of them are, you know, going into our 40s, and it's like a lot of people have a perspective shift though, but a lot of people are still sucked into that crazy dieting world where I'm going to eat 1,000 calories for a couple of weeks and then I'll lose the weight and then I'll be fine. And I'm like, we're at a stage in our hormonal and bone health where we really can't afford that mistake. Like, you can't afford that in your 30s. Like, maybe in your 20s, you did that once or whatever and like leave it there. But like, you can't afford that right now. It's just not good for us at all.
Exactly. I like that you can't afford it.
You can't afford that.
You can't, because you got to think about everything that's going on in your body as an expense.
It is. And like, we can't afford that. So, you know, thank you for doing your work. And, you know, even if people want that weight loss outcome, I mean, you can help them safely. And that's really what, like, I want to, you know, I have people come to me for weight loss. I don't necessarily do weight loss with every single person. I say that like, I really do that with my athletes who really need a weight on the scale. So people get that confused. But my focus, the goals I make with people are, you know, performance-based goals, nutrition-based goals, and like meeting your needs and feeling good and feeling energized, which are like paramount to like, I want to step on the scale and weigh 130 pounds. Like, what does that even mean? Like, does it have much meaning? Right.
Exactly.
So thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. Is there anything that you want to end with or any closing thoughts or statements?
No, just thank you so much for having me and, you know, being a part of your podcast. Like, this is great.
Yeah.
You're great people. Yeah. And I'm super honored.
Yeah.
You know, if anyone has any questions about anything, you know, that we talked about, you know, you can definitely reach out to me on Instagram @nakedwellness_. Don't forget the underscores.
Right. Don't forget the underscores. And you'll go somewhere else.
Yeah.
I will post that, guys. So that'll be in like the little notes underneath the show on iTunes and on Spotify or wherever you're listening to this. So you'll have full access to find Amber. Amber, thank you so much for your time. I know our time is precious, so we really appreciate your knowledge. So thank you.
Thank you.